Are we recording?
Yeah.
Hey guys, welcome to the Dark Light Podcast. I'm Joe.
I'm Jen.
And today's episode is going to be on Russell Maurice Johnson,
aka the bedroom strangler,
aka the balcony rapist, who was born in 1947 in St. Thomas, Ontario.
He lived in Guelph and he went to St. Joseph Elementary School and grew up poor. His dad was an alcoholic, he was emotionally abusive, and a psychopath. He married a bipolar teenager who was misdiagnosed with schizophrenia and had three children, Russell and his two brothers. His dad was abusive to his mom.
Okay, so this is a little bit of a trigger warning of like a religious, we put religious slander, don't really know if it's religious slander. It is a trigger warning though, because well, we needed to put it in to just kind of like show who his dad was. But anyway, so his dad wouldn't let them celebrate Christmas due to stores being owned by Jews who just wanted to drain Christians out of their money, allegedly. But all other Christian holidays were highly celebrated in the household. His mom was very Catholic, and Russell believed that you could sin as long as you didn't get caught.
Russell was a peeping Tom. He was bullied as a kid, and he was sexually assaulted at the age of 14.
He dropped out of school at 16. He married a girl named Linda, and he had a child. But that didn't last too long because they divorced after 2 years.
Mental illness ran in his family. He also worked as an auto worker at Ford. He was a bodybuilder. His diet consisted of alcohol and dieting pills.
What a fucking wicked diet. All right. So he was extremely clean, like OCD clean. He was constantly washing his hands. During a workday, he would wash his hands up to about 15 times a day. He wore gloves and Vaseline at work and at the gym. He was over 6'3" and weighed over 200 pounds. He was very lean and very muscular.
Well built and an attractive young man. Ordinary looking person. Again, very robotic how I said that. With the weird urge to kill. Juvenile records show several sexual assaults. In 1969, he attended a London psychiatric hospital for sexual
deviance.
Wow.
In 1969, he began raping, but the murder started in early 1970s. So what we're going to be talking about is murder, necrophilia, sexual assault, voyeurism, sexual sadism.
Sadism?
My mouth cannot pronounce it.
Neither can I. It's okay.
But he worked most of his crimes in the London and the Guelph, Ontario area.
His crime started with sexually assaulting almost a dozen women who survived, all victims between 20 and 49 years of age.
So his first murder, unfortunately, was Mary Catherine Hicks. She would be murdered on October 19th, 1973. He broke into her apartment and strangled her. He then tucked her body into her bed, leaving her in a sleeping position. After he killed Mary Catherine, he cleaned up the scene. When police came to the scene of the crime, there is no obvious signs of foul play. Police concluded that she had died of suffocation due to an allergic reaction of her medication.
Second murder, 1 month later, November 30th, was that 1973?
Yeah.
27-year-old Alice Ralston was found dead in her Guelph apartment. No obvious signs of violence. They figured her death was due to hardening of the arteries.
The third murder would be Eleanor Hartwick, who died on March 4th, 1974 in her London home. He posed her with books in her hand. And her death was also labeled as an allergic reaction from prescription drugs.
Police started to get suspicious that these young women were just passing away in their sleep. Fourth murder, Doris Brown, 49, found dead August 8th, 1974 by one of her children. Blanket was tucked up to her chin, and she was also a mother of five.
She lived with her two youngest children, and she was divorced after 30 years. The children said when they found their mom, her room was cleaner than she had ever seen it before.
Friends would describe her as dedicated and active in her church, elegant, and just starting to get her life back together after divorce and starting to be happy.
The night before her oldest daughter Laura's 16th birthday, they planned to get her driver's license in the morning. Laura realized that she had overslept and that her mom was a very reliable person, so when they found her alarm clock still ringing, she knew that something was seriously wrong, and aside from that, they also couldn't wake her up.
Frantic, she called her aunt and uncle, who came over. Pathologists found abrasions to the body, blood in her throat and rectum. Police not notified?
Yeah.
They weren't notified for that?
No.
What the fuck? Cause of death, pulmonary edema. Fluid in the lungs. One cause of pulmonary edema is strangulation.
All these people had vicious deaths, and it was escalating. All sexually assaulted after the death. Russell was changing his behavior. The deaths did not indicate to police that there was a serial killer. Like, that's like, what are we on? Four victims.
Going on to five. And they...
And they had no idea. That's scary.
Diane Bites? Yep. 23. She was an only child. Night before New Year's Eve, got engaged to James. They were really good together. But she received flowers from an unknown stranger days before. Delivery driver remembers dropping them off, though there was no records of any flower places. So it is deemed an incorrect memory. Damn.
So Diane Bates was described as a nice young girl. Everyone liked her. James and Diane had a nice breakfast in the morning around 5:45 before James leaves for work. Can you imagine if fucking Adam woke me up when he went to work at 5 a.m. for breakfast? I would not be getting up.
No, neither would I.
Love him to death? Nope. But she died New Year's Eve, December 31st, 1974.
She was found with her hands bound with nylon, strangled with her bra, naked, lying under a pile of blankets, sexually assaulted after death, and her furniture turned upside down. That is a weird thing to do. Yes. I mean, all of this is weird, but like...
Okay. Super side note, but... Adam did that to Liam one day. Adam and a few of his buddies, while Liam was out, I think he was out at work, they went into his apartment and they just flipped all of the furniture upside down.
That's an innocent thing to do as yes. long as you're not murdering people.
Yes. But he had a really tough day at work and he came home and he was like, for fuck's sakes. Like, tried to go to bed, but they flipped his bed upside down. Russell called police to a murder in the area at another apartment complex. She was found by her fiancé at 6 p.m. after coming back to the apartment after work. They were supposed to go to a New Year's party, and he was devastated. He had to assure police that this was actually a murder. Russell put no effort into covering this up. And sorry, I kind of confused myself there, but Russell had called the police to a murder in another complex to, like, throw them off of this one.
So did he murder the other person, too?
Not the one that he called in, no.
That's weird.
Yeah. But just to, like, throw police off.
Police found one of her slippers out in the hallway. She answered a knock on the door and was immediately seized by her assailant.
Superintendent of the apartment building noted that there was a brown Buick idling on the street. The exhaust stain in the snow showed that the car had been there for a long time, between 4 a.m. and 9 a.m. This would be the murder that would be deemed the first in the city. So,
after five?
Diane Bites. Diane.
The fifth one is yeah. when they decided.
Yeah, they kind of figured, but they didn't connect this to any of the other victims. They deemed this one a murder and not any of the other ones.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Police questioned hundreds of people, but the case went cold for over 2 years. Police sent out a $5,000 reward for any information that led to an arrest or conviction.
Two other victims had been targeted and choked, but Russell was interrupted and fled the scene. One of the survivors was able to give a good description of the man. She said he was tall, strong, and gave enough details of his look that they were able to make a sketch.
The sixth victim, Luella Janine George, died April 15th, 1977. She lived in a four-story home. And she was strangled to death, then sexually assaulted after death.
That is so disgusting. Like, sexual assault is disgusting in itself. Mm-hmm. But to do it to a dead person? Like,
there's some fucked up people out there.
That's nasty. Like, at least they didn't have to feel it, I guess. But that's still just tragic. Like,
yep.
No sexual assault is a good sexual assault. But, ugh. All right. So Russell would steal underwear and jewelry, but he would discard them in an area nearby. They would figure out later that the stuff discarded is on a direct path between her location, and Donna's apartment. The coworker found her not to... He stole stuff from Luella's apartment. And after a coworker found her not showing up for her shift as a cashier at the hospital across from her home, they kind of got a little bit suspicious.
Police now told the public that there was a man on the loose and to lock doors and windows. No matter how many floors up you were, he would get in.
Isn't that fucking terrifying?
That is.
They were saying that he would get up to 15 stories high. And I was watching a video on him, like, a while ago. And, like, it was an interview with him. And he said he would just, like, look up. Like, the next day he would look up and be like, how the fuck did I do that?
That's fucked. I can barely even climb a ladder.
I can barely do stairs, so.
July 15th, 1977, a young girl had answered her apartment buzzer to a man saying he was the police. She didn't buy this and immediately called the police to verify that the man was an officer, but he soon fled the scene and made his way to the next victim.
His next victim, his seventh victim, would be Donna Veldboom. This is the one that they would find the stuff in the path.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, where it was discarded. So she died July 15th, 1977. She was living in Ontario for less than a year, and she was from New Brunswick. She was deemed as, like, a very social and very happy girl.
She was visiting a friend around 11:30, and she said goodbye to her friend and went home. Russell changed his pattern and cut open her chest.
And then sexually assaulted her. Like, blood would be flying everywhere. Ugh. He then washed her cut and posed her. He washed the cloth in the washer. Later, he said he wanted to curl up inside her to be warm and safe. Oh,
what the fuck?
That is gross.
It is just so weird how he changed through so many victims. Like, usually when you're a serial killer, like, you have the same patterns, but, like,
yeah, it but says, it like, seems like he's, like, escalating.
Yeah, and he's experimenting more.
Yeah.
That's fucked up.
No, thank you.
When the police started investigating Donna's murder, they went through the tenants that lived there, and they saw that Russell lived in the same building. They also found out that he lived in the same building as Luella, and they also found that his ex-girlfriend lived in the apartment that Diane lived in. They also found his juvenile records suspicious.
I would too.
Yep. Yep. Russell's neighbors had called in suspicion on him. The day that he murdered Luella, Russell had reported stolen luggage out of his brown Buick.
Dun, dun, dun.
It's adding up. Over 30 officers were working the case.
Whoa.
Russell was placed under 24-hour watch. Police noticed
erratic.
Erratic? I was trying not to say erotic behavior.
Well, I'm sure they noticed erotic behavior too.
This is, yes. He would park his car in locations that seemed insignificant, get out, walk around the block just to get back into the car and wait a half hour as if he were waiting for someone, and then just drive away.
Despite him having odd behaviors, nothing incriminating would happen. 4 days after being on surveillance, they found out that Russell was planning a trip to leave. They had no evidence on him, but it's either now or never.
On July 28th, 1977, police arrest Russell Maurice Johnson. The interrogation lasts 22 hours. And finally, he breaks down and admits to the crimes. At times, he starts to cry.
He tells the
officer, "You have no reason to cry. You did the bad things."
Right? That's what I don't understand. Is like, they all obviously know that it's bad to kill people. And to sexually assault them. And to cut their chests open. And to want to crawl inside of them. And to stalk people. Like, it's bad. They know it's bad. And they're still doing it. So when you're caught, just fucking own up to it.
Yeah, you can't cry when you get caught.
No. Ugh. So he tells the officers that strangulation gave him the same rush that football did, but better because it would last longer.
No.
I cannot say that I have ever had an urge to murder that gave me the same rush as dancing. Like, what? So he also provided police with an unsigned statement admitting to the crimes. I just want to say I have never had an urge to murder, period.
Me too. With Diane, he entered the kitchen, where he confronted her and he began to strangle her. When he heard this on the radio, he wasn't even sure if that was what? Hid between Diane. I can't read.
When he heard this on the radio, he wasn't even sure
if it was him.
If it was him.
Between Diane, what's her name? Bites? Blitz?
Beats.
Sorry, Diane. Death in 1974 and Luella's death in 1977, he attacked two other women. They only survived because Russell had been interrupted and fled the scene. They identified him, and many of his rape victims also identified him.
In January 24th, 1978, he pleaded not guilty to Luella, Donna, and Diane's, which he was under the charges for first-degree murder of three counts. On February 1st, 1978, he was found not guilty by reason of insanity. Yes, Russell admits that he has done other bad things in the past, but won't give any details, won't say what they were, what happened, or to who.
Police decide that if he wants to clear his conscience. Oh my god.
You said it.
But I sound weird. He could tell them, but won't be prosecuted for them. He goes into great detail about previous crimes. He strangled a girl who didn't die. And he committed himself.
That was, like, way back when he committed himself into the psychiatric hospital. Yeah. That's when he did that.
Like, he was a teenager, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. During the trial, he admitted to killing four other women, the mysterious deaths previously named above, and committing 11 non-fatal assaults throughout his life. Since February 1978... he has been held in a maximum security mental hospital, mental health center. Penaguinishi. Jen was supposed to say the word. Oh, right.
I can't remember.
Penaguinishi. It's a really long word. I'll spell it out. PENETANGUISHENE. It's a mental health center, but it's now called Waypoint Center for Mental Health, which is a lot easier to say. Penaguinishine.
Oh, that's going to bug me now.
I know. I'm so sorry to anybody who lives there.
But the name of your town sucks.
But that is hard. That is a bigger word than elephant, and I used to think that elephant was the biggest word when I was 7. And that is a lot bigger than elephant.
Sexual sadist?
That's not the word.
Sadist? Lust, murder, and necrophilia. He was diagnosed with sudden... psychotic episodes in which he loses touch with reality. In 2005, he began chemical castration with what?
Lupron. Which, good, you should be castrated. Not that I think that castration is good, but, like, it's basically where, like, zip.
I know how to castrate.
I thought that's what you were like. I've never heard of this before.
No. The method they use.
Oh, I think it's a drug.
Oh.
Sorry.
So it lowers testosterone and lessens sexual thinking. With this and therapy, a person can fix their sexual deviant behavior. He said he doesn't want to fix his behavior and has not shown any changes in attitude.
In August 2019, he applied for leniency. It was denied due to him finding nothing wrong with himself and not wanting to change. He has applied for some sort of leniency every year since his arrest. Escorted passes, medium security, and he's been denied every other time. Which we were just looking that up, where he was just, one of the family members said that they did not want him to be able to have escorted visits to Walmart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't that in, like, 2020 something?
2020, I think?
Yeah, 2020.
Yeah. So I'm glad that they're still denying it. He was also suspected in 10 other deaths.
He confessed to the first 4 murders, and death was by strangulation. Oh, he will be moved temporarily to a medium security forensic unit at the Brockville Mental Health Center to figure out what treatments will be suitable for Russell.
It will be months rather than years that he will be in the temporary medium security. They don't want to move him permanently as there are woman patients attending there. Why would they move him there in the first place?
That's just a dumb move.
that is. There's a risk slash never not any risk slash solution to risk management approach to it.
How many risks can you put in there?
I don't know. But to me, that is a risk. Like, I don't put him in if he's killing. You wouldn't put a child murderer in a jail with children. Why really would you put a female murderer or a female, yeah, murderer, no, a person who murders females
with females?
That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
He will be confined from the women in the facility. I hope so.
There we go.
Still, he shouldn't be anywhere near them.
No.
The associate chief of the Royal Ottawa Health Center Care Group, responsible for forensic psychiatry, said the opportunity of being able to treat and rehabilitate somebody with serious history of sexual motivated homicide is pretty rare.
Donna's brother Bill said in an email concerning one of his recent leniency applications, quote, "For years we have been worried that Mr. Johnson ages, sympathy for him might emerge, such that he is no longer seen as a threat to the public," unquote.
Bill also said that it is somewhat reassuring that Russell is showing no remorse, expresses no remorse, accepts no responsibility for his action, and remains a threat even in his advancing years. Russell's psychiatrist. Oh my god.
It's okay. I got you, bro.
I just don't know that word.
No, every time I put it in something, you're like, sick, sick.
But any
sick,
other time, sick. I can read it.
Yep.
He said,
pressure.
He said it is pressure. Reassuring because it means he will stay locked up.
Russell has a narcissistic personality disorder as well as sexual sadism, voyeurism, fetishism, transvestic fetishism, necrophilia.
I'm glad you have that paragraph.
Amphetamine. We should have reread this.
We should.
Alcohol and sedative dependence disorders. He is in remission while in a controlled setting.
Russell has never taken full responsibility and blames his drug use.
Marital.
Marital issues. How is that a marital issue? And sleep problems with stress, which stress him out at times. He also doesn't think he is a sexual sadist. Psychiatrists have said what lead him to his crimes are sexual grief. Fuck my life.
I just want you guys to know I wrote this story over a year ago, and this is the first time Jen's reading it, and it's the first time I'm reading it.
And it's apparently my first time reading ever.
So that's why we're like, what? Oh, what? God. That's so cool. And also stumbling over these big words.
An anger towards women. A need for revenge and a need for absolute control with women.
He is described as a model inmate. He's a he is a leader in patient activities. He particularly is active in the workshop. He really likes the sports and fitness. He'll talk until directly interrupted. Russell is now 74 and still serving his indefinite sentence.
During his non-fatal assaults, women said that they would be raped and choked into unconsciousness. Some would just wake up to see a strange man looking down at them and then leave without a trace. They would wonder how he got into their homes, and things would be moved.
And he would get into their homes by hopping their balconies one at a time until he got all the way up to the apartment that he wanted, which is terrifying. Lock your doors, even if you are on the 15th level of an apartment. Lock it.
Lock it up.
Lock it up.
All right. Thanks for listening to the Dark Light podcast. Sorry, we are shit today.
We had one good episode. Go take a listen to our last episode, The Candyman, because that one wasn't trash. You guys can follow us on Instagram at dark.klight.podcast_.
And on Twitter at darklightpod1.
You can email us at darklightpodcast@hotmail.com with any episode requests, stories of yours you want to be on an upcoming sequel called Crowd Chronicles, where we just read your stories.
We will see you next Tuesday, and to remember,
keep your lights on! We'll have all of our sources in the show notes. Bye! Oh, see you next Tuesday! Bye! Bye. I'm waiting.